Now let's look at some specific areas. 1. Income. I always feel it worthwhile with any charity to look at its major income sources, and this is a core part of the work. Some charities may only receive 3 or 4 grants per year from a statutory body. Then cross-referencing this paperwork would soon confirm the income position. As I stated earlier in the podcast, you need to check the paperwork of grant-making institutions for any reporting they require, i.e. audit, and how the money should be spent. Other substantial amounts of cash donations and similar offerings. You may need to look at internal control procedures. Look for large or unusual transactions. Things outside of the norm, and ask the question why. Failing to find suitable answers to questions is something to bear in mind when you are coming to sign off the Independent Examiner's Certificate. Gift aid tax relief recovered from the Treasury is sometimes a difficult area to review. Although in the 21st century, many people now give understanding order with gift aid declaration certificates to support this, there are still many who are giving cash through the post or through offertory bags, and this can be a very difficult area to control or to check. Make sure that the charity have suitable control systems in place and ensure there is an audit trail to follow, i.e. money received, gift aid declaration certificate signed, gift aid claimed. Many charities, especially religious charities, may have gift days or special appeals where there are substantial gifts for a particular project. So always look at this area. Some money given may be restricted income, which brings me to this difficult subject. It is very important for charities to distinguish between restricted income and unrestricted income. Restricted income relates to money specifically given for projects or purposes and is identified as such. This money should be kept separate, not necessarily in a separate bank account, but there certainly should be an accounting system in place which can allocate monies to particular funds. Use of good software helps this. Unrestricted income relates to the general core work of the charity. Designated funds are where monies are put aside for specific purposes, but usually from general funds. They remain designated, but can be transferred back. Look in the minutes for verification of these transfers. Service level agreements. These will need to be reviewed as to recognition of income and the expenditure relating to the projects. Legacies. Always read the legacy file. Look for solicitor's letters and remember the words certainty, measurement and entitlement. These three words apply to all sources of income and should be understood. This will determine what should be recognised as income to the SOFA. Look for correspondence received informing the charity of a legacy, the amount involved and when it is entitled. 2. Expenditure. We are not doing an audit, but simple analytical review is helpful and will establish areas of variance. Again, look for large and unusual items. Is expenditure in line with the objects of the charity? Again, has expenditure been allocated correctly between restricted and unrestricted funds? Much of the charity's expenditure can be cross-referenced to projects and monies received. It is usually possible to do control accounts for salaries, which will quite often constitute much of the expenditure of a charity, other costs sometimes being immaterial in relation to the whole. I do not believe in extensive vouching, but some review or random checking will not go amiss. 3. Assets and liabilities. Some verification of the figures shown in the balance sheet is necessary, but extensive testing is not required. Sometimes it is quite simple to establish ownership by a few simple inquiries. 4. Trustees. A very important area of any independent examination is looking at transactions with trustees and/or related parties. It has always been a principle that trustees do not get paid or should not benefit from a charity. In recent years, this has changed, and it is now quite possible to establish in the Constitution or memorandum and articles that trustees can be paid. This applies to a minority of trustees, either salaries or the receipt of payment for services. This should be verified to the minutes. And if the trustees are benefiting, they should always declare their interest and not vote on this particular area when it comes to a trustee meeting. Transactions with trustees have to be disclosed in the financial statements, and it is important that you try and establish whether payments or transactions are linked. Does the charity give contracts of work to relatives or business partners of trustees? Is a spouse employed? This is quite common. All of this needs disclosing, but work can be achieved by asking questions and doing some research. Why not ask the chief executive or the chairman or someone in the charity at the outset of an independent examination to give you a letter outlining benefits received from trustees and or related parties? This will at least be a start and can be relied upon, although you should also make your own inquiries. 5. During the course of your work, you need to be considering the accounting policies of the charity and estimates and judgments used. If you have followed all that I have talked about during the course of this podcast, you will realise at this point that we have probably covered the first 9 directions of the Charity Commission to which I referred earlier. These being 1. Examining thresholds. 2. Documenting your work. 3. Understanding the charity. 4. Reviewing the records. 5. Comparing the accounts with the records. 6. Carrying out analytical procedures. 7. Reviewing the form and content of the accounts. 8. Reviewing the accounting policies and estimates. 9. Considering the trustees' annual report. I've not really referred much to the trustees' annual report during this podcast, but perhaps suffice to say that you need to ensure that it complies with SORT regulations and that what is being said by the trustees in their annual review of activities, achievements, performance and plans does actually correspond and is consistent with what the accounts disclose. A further responsibility under the Charities Act is the statutory duty to report to the Charity Commission any areas of concern where you have not received sufficient explanation for transactions, areas where perhaps trustees are benefiting and should not be so, where there are not proper controls, and where the charity has acted outside of the objects of the trust. There are other areas, of course, which have to be reported. Dishonesty or fraud immediately come to mind, and failures of internal control, knowledge or suspicion of money laundering and terrorism. This statutory duty to report should not be taken lightly. Therefore, having done all of this, we are now at Direction 10, the examiner's report. If all has gone well and you have carried out the work and nothing material is amiss, then you should have no hesitancy in signing the independent examiner's certificate. This is always signed by an individual and not a firm. However, if you have come across major issues, which means a qualified report is necessary, then this should be disclosed. As with any audit report, you state the problem. For example, in connection with my examination, it has come to my attention that the proper accounting records were not kept during the year, were not sufficient to explain the charity's transactions in accordance with Section 41 of the 1993 Act. Then you go on to certify the accounts by saying, subject to the above, etc. Do not forget that the independent examination is a negative assurance. You are not certifying a true and fair view. You are just signing off that nothing has come to your attention which will stop you signing the certificate. I should have mentioned at the outset, before taking on an independent examination, you should always ensure you have an engagement letter. These can be obtained quite easily from the association or other sources. You should do money laundering procedures. These are there to protect you and are a requirement of statute. Well, I hope this podcast gives you an idea and direction in which to go when doing an independent examination. Thank you for listening to this AAT podcast.